Horror Baptist Church, a church on the way to God's heart, presents a message for your life. Get ready and take notes, because God wants to speak to you today.
When you look at the Ten Commandments, if you might have learned them while you were in catechism or in a Catholic church, and now that you are a Baptist, and now that you're in a so-called Protestant church, you may not even notice the difference between the commandments. And I'm going to show you that because I think it's important. But before I do that, I want us to definitely get in step with this, and I guess I want to kind of make a little summary of the first four that we discussed last week before we continue. The first commandment, you shall have no other gods, because I am the Lord your God, he says in singular person. As a matter of fact, when Ed was talking about God saying, I am, and when he talked about his mom saying, because I am your mother, I thought he was going to refer to the commandment of honor your mother and your father, but he didn't. But basically, that's what his mama was saying. You honor me, not the other way around. All right? Basically, shut up. You know, I don't know. But God says, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. I am the only one. I am the only one before you, besides you, besides me, in front of me. It doesn't matter where you look or how you look at it, because I am the one who delivers you. I am the one who rescues you. I am the one who saves you. I am the one who redeemed you, delivering your souls from the slavery in Egypt. You may have lived a whole life in Egypt seeing too many gods, but guess what? We got to get all of those out of your system. We got to purge all this stuff from your heart and from your mind, because there is no other but me. Look at what I have done and get conviction in your heart that there is no other God before me, besides me, behind me, or above me. You get it? That's basically the first commandment. Commandment number two, you shall not make yourselves an idol. Basically, what God is saying is, don't even try to reduce me to a product of your imagination. Don't even try to reduce me to the work of your hands. You can't make me. You can't make nothing that is me. Do not reduce me to your own thinking. I am not like any other you have ever seen or heard from. The moment you carve something that you create with your own hands, you become its God with your own hands. And I am not to be reduced to anything made by you, because I am your creator. We're not going there yet for a second, because y'all going to be looking at that and going to be confused about what I'm saying. Thank you. Appreciate that. We're going there in a second. But some of you were already looking at the differences and not listening to me. This is very important. Number three. You shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. Do not ever misinterpret me. Basically, God is saying, do not ever go out there and use my name and put my seal or put my approval on any of the junk that you may come up with. Watch out. Do not make me look like you. Do not use my name in vain. It's basically saying, do not make me look like you. Because you're the one that's supposed to look like me. I make you in my image. Don't make me in your image. Don't do this. Don't use my name. No cursing. Oh, my God. You have no authority over me. Do not swear by me or by anything, because you didn't make anything. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't need to swear on anything. Do not make false promises that you cannot keep. You get it? Basically, watch your mouth. Watch your heart. Watch your mind. Now, third commandment, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. It's about honoring God. Honoring God. Remember, we're going to move on to honoring others when we talk about the next commandments. But it's about honoring God, keeping the Sabbath, resting on the seventh day. You see, God rested, and I already told you why God rested. I'm going to give you two simple reasons. Number one, he was finished with all his work. God didn't want to work 7 days a week, even though we make him. We are the ones who make him work 7 days a week, right? But God finished everything. And when everything was good, was extremely good, God rested. God said, I'm done. Everything's done and it's perfectly done. That's enough. I've done enough in 6 days. The seventh day, I'm going to chill. I'm going to enjoy the day off. Now, think about it. Does God want to take a day off from you? Maybe if I was God, I want to take a few days off of you. From you. I'm sorry. Not off of you. But you think about it. I'm pretty sure you want to take some days off from me. Go ahead. But I don't think God wants to take a day off from us. But he wants us to honor him by resting in him. The seventh day, the Sabbath, the rest. We should be resting in him and with him. We ought to be content with working 6 days a week and take a day to enjoy God. I mean, he rated all the work when he saw it. He said it was good. And he said, okay, I can stop right here. And we can follow his example. I think Moses was very clear when he spoke and said, because God rested on the seventh day after creation, we ought to rest on the seventh day after we work 6 days a week. Simple as that. God is the example. I'm pretty sure that God resting on the seventh day, part of it was enjoying the fruit of his labor. Enjoying the fruit of all that he had worked. And you and I are what he worked on. He wants to enjoy you and me on the rest or the Sabbath, the seventh day, whatever you want to call it. So why not take advantage and just take a break? And why not make Sunday the day of rest when you can come and worship, hear the word, and fellowship with others and pray and listen to his voice, spend time with him and his people? All right, so I've given you the first four in a nutshell. Now we're going to continue for the rest of the commandments. And I, like I said, as we covered those four last week, we're going to look today at the horizontal part of the Ten Commandments. We looked at the vertical. We were looking at what the relationship with God looks like. Now we're going to look at what the relationship with others look like as we continue. Now we can look at the commandments for a second here. And I want to show you something. Thank you. I want us to look at the commandments because the way you probably learned them in catechism were like this. You shall have no other gods before me. Great. You shall have no other gods before me. It's the first commandment we talk about. Then commandment number two, you shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. That's the second commandment when you look at catechism in the Catholic Church. But that's not our second commandment according to the Protestant Church. The second commandment is, you shall not make yourself a graven image. That's against idolatry. The Catholic Church does not have that as a commandment. Did you know that? Did you notice that? Some of you who've been Catholic before may have not even remembered that. Because when you read the chapter, you read the whole thing. It's there. But the Catholic Church has taken it upon themselves to change so that commandment number two does not talk about idolatry or images. Now, I don't know if it takes some really a lot of knowledge or wisdom to make some deductions here and to think maybe the Catholic Church doesn't want to include that there as a direct command because of all the images and all the stuff that they keep as relics in their churches. You see the difference? Now, but they make it up at the end. Because as you can see then, and number three is remember the Lord's Day, right? And then you see that the Lord's Day for us will be the fourth. And you keep going. Now, the difference is in the last commandment. Tenth commandment for us, you shall not covet, period. You shall not covet the neighbor's wife. You shall not covet their property. You shall not covet, not covet, not covet. That's it. But the Catholic Church divides it into two. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not covet your neighbor's goods. In order to make up and make it 10. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever noticed that before? Probably not. And if you did, kudos to you. If not, kudos now because you know. Your pastor told you about it. You see the difference? I mean, not to say that their commandments are no good, because they're all there except one. So maybe they thought, hey, we ended up with 9. We got to come up with a 10. So let's divide the last one. I don't know if that's what happened. I don't know how it happened. But this is the classical Protestant and the Catholic, the way they see it. All right? Now that you see the difference and why I have this particular order, and when you probably learned them or not, you were like, oh, wait a second. Maybe you'll see the difference. But in Exodus chapter 20, we're going to continue on, and we're going to continue on in verse 12 with the last 6 commandments. It says, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. And of course, we've heard this before, and we may not know where to find it, but we've heard, you know, that's the first commandment with a promise. Have you ever heard that before? That's the first commandment with a promise. The others don't promise anything. They just give guidance and the rule. But this one gives us a rule, but also gives us a promise. Now, if you go back or forward to Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 1 through 3, the Apostle Paul, a couple thousands years later, says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Now, for the Israelites, they seen this and said, in the land, and they were thinking the promised land. Now, but Paul opens it up and says, you're not going to get a promised land. This is your land. This land is your land, whatever, right? So right here where you are right now, while you live on this earth, honor your mom, honor your dad, because it carries a promise of maybe health and longevity and all that stuff. I think what God is trying to tell us here with this commandment is that we need to build a strong foundation. We see it in our society. We're so messed up. And we see the families have broken apart. So many children being raised by a lonely mother or a lonely father, you know, single parenting or even gay parenting. We've seen it all. It's all changing. It's not God's design. You see, the way to destroy society is through the family. Period. The family is the first institution established by God. You see, there was nothing else except marriage at the beginning. God made man and he made woman and he put them together, made them one flesh. And that became the foundation for everything in every relationship in society. That's why we need to be honoring our parents, and we need to be caring for our children. We need to be having healthy families in the Lord. That's why we need to seek God together. That's why as a family, we need to seek God to be the center. Because the way to destroy society is destroying the home. Stability of the society depends on our honoring one another, especially honoring parents. That builds a stable society. And it gives us a good way of authority, right? Proper. It teaches to respect the authority of parents. Now, of course, you don't go with blind obedience. With God, you can go with blind obedience. I call that faith. I obey him because I trust him. And you know what? We've been talking about Genesis in our Wednesday night class, and And the other day I was praying and meditating and thinking about this. And what was it? Because we were talking about how the Bible says that Eve was deceived by the serpent, but Adam was not. He wasn't deceived. He knew exactly what he was doing. Why did he eat the fruit then? Why did he eat it if he knew? She hurt the snake. He just took it. And it made me think, whether she was deceived and he wasn't, what Adam did was same thing we do. We betray God by not trusting him. Adam's faith went kaput. His faith died the moment he took that fruit. What condemned Adam was his sin because he did not trust God. So he messed up. All right. So now, can his children trust him? Anything about that? We're imperfect parents. Can our children trust us? There's so much going on out there. And I tell any child, honor your parents. Obey your parents. But what if there's abuse? What if there's abuse? Are they to honor those parents with dignity and gratitude? Yes, they should honor, but should they obey? That's another thing. Now, I do want you to know, and I want us to understand something about honoring and obedience, is that you are to honor your parents all of your life. You ought to honor your parents all of your life until you die. Now, are you to obey them all of your life? No. You don't have to obey mom and dad all of your life. Imagine, Carolina, if you had to obey your mom right now. That don't sound right, right? I don't want you to get beat up on the way out. No, I'm just kidding, right? But think about it. Carolina, you honor your mom, but you don't obey her. You make your own decisions, right? Yes, you do. And you're supposed to. We are to honor our parents all of our lives, but we're not to obey them all of our lives. Now, in order for you to not obey your parents, you ought to take responsibility for yourself. And that's why I tell the young guys and girls that come to my office when their parents bring them by the ear. And they're like, well, my mom won't let me do this. My mom won't let me do that. My dad won't let me do that. And I'm like, you know, when you have your own roof, when you have your own job, and when you pay your own way and you're responsible for yourself, you do what you want to. You don't have to obey them. Because I'm an adult. No, you're not. Adulthood is not defined by A, B, and 18 or 21 in my book. Well, that's David's book, right? Who cares? In my book, you become an adult when you're responsible for all of your decisions, period. Adulthood means responsibility, not coming of age. There are some 16, 17-year-old kids that are pretty much well adults, but there are some others who are 28 and still cannot become adults. They can't be responsible for their own, and they always have to come back and say, Mom, Dad. You see, you honor your parents always. You obey them until you become fully responsible for every single decision. You don't have to obey them, but you do have to honor them. At least listen to their counsel. Even if you're going to do the contrary. I always laugh and I say this, and I'm going to go venture out on something very personal. I've always told my son, how come you always call me for a counsel after you've made a decision? Do your kids do that sometimes too? Where they come to you and say, Dad, what do you think about this? And you already know in your heart, you already made the decision. You're just trying to validate it. We used to do that, don't we? We did that too. Every one of us, right? You know, kids will learn from what we do. And if we live a life that is exemplary in honoring our parents, most likely our kids would do the same thing. Hopefully. Now, I heard of a man who was taking care of his elderly father. And he will always sit him in a corner when it was time to eat. And he sat his dad in a corner. And the old man had to eat in the little corner. And one day he saw his young son building something out of wood. And he asked his dad, he asked his son, what are you building? Oh, I'm building a little stool. A stool? What is that stool for? So when you get old, I know where to sit you at dinner time. See, they learn. They see. That applies to us, all of us. You see, we ought to be thankful and thoughtful about how we're going to age and when we get there, who's going to take care of us. That's another thing, taking care of our parents and honoring them. Do we show appreciation for the sacrifices that they've made for us? Do we model respect and authority? Those are the kind of questions we ought to ask ourselves. And as you can see on the little paper, I did not write fill in the blanks for you. I just wrote some questions for you to reflect on. But let's go to verse 13. It says, you shall not murder. Do I have to explain this, or could we skip this one? Well, the value of human life, I think it needs to be addressed. Because it may, and I could be wrong, but from where I am, what I see, and the people I hear know, you ain't going to go out there and kill nobody. I believe you. I trust you like that. But there's more than that. When all of a sudden someone in the family or a friend, when somebody says, well, I don't want to keep this baby because it'd be very inconvenient. I'd have to quit college. Or the baby is Down syndrome and I don't want to care for a baby like that. I couldn't handle it. And we start thinking of our own ideas about what murder is. And I'm sorry, this may sound pretty gruesome, and some even may feel it as an attack. But when God creates, the Bible says in Psalm 139, that he is the one that makes it happen. And from the beginning, the embryo is already life that he has made. Yeah, plainly said. Abortion is murder when it's premeditated. But I'm pretty sure that that's a difficult pill to swallow. But to commit murder, it sounds like an adult killing another or another human being that's already out of the womb. Murder is a direct assault on someone who's been made in God's image. That's why it's so important. It protects human life and human dignity, this commandment. As a matter of fact, if you look at Matthew chapter 5 and verses 21 and 22, Jesus said, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool. How many of you have ever called somebody a fool? You fool shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Shucks. That sounds pretty bad. So Jesus takes it from the act of murder to the matter of the heart of hate. Hate, and not even hate, anger. How many of you ever felt angry at someone? Why is this so important? Because anger becomes bitterness, and bitterness becomes resentment, and resentment becomes hatred, and hatred is the seed of murder. That's why we need to watch it when we get angry at people. I know it because I do too, and I have to ask for forgiveness sometimes when I get angry at some people. Many of you know who Corrie Ten Boom is, a survivor of the Holocaust, who's written so many books and so much beautiful poetry and devotionals about her life as she survived the Nazi camps. And one of the guards who tortured her and abused sexually her sister, he came back and asked her for forgiveness. And Corrie Ten Boom, by the grace of God, forgave him. That's the power of the gospel, forgiveness. And last night, you know, I was listening to a testimony. Many of you know who he is. Terry Crews, the ex-NFL player who's host of so many shows and has done so many movies. He's a believer, but he was a believer who was living a lie. And he betrayed his wife in so many ways. And I'm skipping a little bit because I'm talking about murder, but he was an adulterer. And his wife was speaking, and she said, "You know what? The highest calling of any Christian." What is the highest calling of any Christian? You may think, well, to share the gospel, to love the Lord your God. Yeah, that sounds pretty great. But she said, the highest calling probably for a Christian is to learn to forgive. Because it was so hard for her to forgive him. But she was able. You know how much it cost Jesus to forgive us? Count the cost. Probably one of the most difficult things. That's why we need to practice forgiveness so that anger doesn't become bitterness. Bitterness doesn't become resentment. And resentment doesn't give birth to hate. See, do we harbor bitterness or we seek peace? Are we harboring resentment? Do we destroy others with our words, with our attitudes, or in our minds, as Jesus said? Forgiveness isn't easy, but it's truly necessary. We all owe it. We all owe forgiveness, but we all need it. Let's go to the next one. You shall not commit adultery. Well, I just kind of gave you an illustration already about that with this testimony. So you need to protect the covenant of marriage. Covenant of marriage. I believe we're making a huge, huge mistake. I believe we're making a huge mistake in our churches, including ours, when we don't speak enough about marriage to the young ones. You know what? You ought to be learning about marriage since you're 13 or 14 years old. We don't need to wait until you do premarital counseling when you're 28, about to get married. We should have done that earlier. Sometimes when we do conferences for couples and we say, well, if you're not married, you can't come to the sessions. You got to be at least engaged to come to the conference. You know what I'm thinking? We ought to let the teenagers come to the marriage conference. We got to prepare them early enough. So be ready. Be ready. Be ready. Okay. But you see, marriage is God's covenant design. I want you to understand that marriage is a privilege. Marriage is such a privilege because God designed marriage for us to learn and to know and to illustrate the relationship between God and his people. You see, the relationship between Jesus and his bride, Jesus and his future spouse, the church. That is the main thing, Jesus and the church. And God said, in the future, my son is going to come and he's going to make a covenant. And he's going to cover you And he's going to take you. And you're going to become one with him like a woman becomes one with man. So let me show you what it looks like in life when I take you and I let you get married between you so that you understand what I'm trying to do between Jesus and the church. Some people take it to be the opposite, that marriage is the main thing here and Jesus comes to show us what marriage is all about. No, marriage on this earth is to illustrate and show us what the marriage to the Lamb is all about. And adultery is the betrayal of the trust. And marriage was designed to be a covenant of faithfulness and intimacy. And that's exactly what adultery does to a marriage. It betrays that. For some reason, people think that when I do counseling, I only do marriage counseling. I do more than that, but that's okay. And there are two questions. Two. I want you to think about this. There are two questions that every person who's been betrayed in marriage have for the adulterer. The hurt person has two questions in their hearts and mind. Why would you ever do this to me? Motive. Why would you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? And question number two. Will I be able to trust you? Can I trust you ever again? Those are the two big questions that the hurting person has in their heart. Why did you do this to me? Can I ever trust you? Those are the two big questions. You see, that's why. Imagine living with those two questions the rest of your life and not ever having an answer. You see how depressing and difficult that can be? Adultery betrays the trust and it destroys families. God designed sex for covenant love, not for casual use. Jesus even said that the lustful thoughts break this command. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28, Jesus said, "But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." I always remember Pastor Charles Stanley, Dr. Stanley, when he used to preach, and one time he said, the first look is normal. I mean, you can't avoid the first look, probably. If that person walks in front of you, you're going to see them. Now, the second look, okay, that could be a little curiosity. But by the third look, you sunk. You're done. You've sinned. Lust sets in. I heard the illustration of a pastor who took a beautiful, beautiful rose. And he just gave it to the person at the end of the pew here in the first pew. He says, "I want you to pass that rose around and keep passing it around. Keep passing it around until every single person has handled the rose. And then when it's done, you give it back to me." And the church was full of people. And the rose kept going and going and going and going. By the time it got to the pastor, when he picked it up, it was all messed up. And he said, "Does anybody want this rose?" And one person said, "Jesus still wants it." I want you to know, if you have fallen in any way, shape, or fashion, Jesus still wants you. But he wants to change you. We got to be careful. No matter what our past is, yes, Christ can resolve that and help us. But we need to be willing to come to him. In 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 and 16, "Do not love the world nor the things of this world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world..." Check it out. "The lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." The lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh. The lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh. What does it look like today? The lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh. You may think, well, let me give you a few ways you can see the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes consuming us in sin. Number one, freedom of expression. Well, hey, this is the way I am, and this is the way I be. This is the way I live. This is the way I dress. I can dress the however way I want to. It's your problem if you look at me. Exposing ourselves. Continuing with the vanity of this world. Gender confusion. You know, a lot of people may call it whatever they want to call it. It's confusion. If you look at yourself and you know what God made you to be, because of the way you are, because of the chromosomes, because of the way you look and what you have in your body, biological and physical, come on. What's the problem? You're very confused. God did not confuse himself. Sex before marriage. Well, you got to try it before you buy it. That's the mentality. Really? That is. Well, what if you're not compatible? Guess what? It's sin. I mean, what is it about this stuff that is so plain out there and we still don't want to heed? Pornography. It downgrades what God has made sacred. And it's so out there. We keep playing it down like it's not sin. It's a choice. I can choose. I can be whatever I want. I can live however I want. I can do whatever I want. The lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh. You get it? And the boastful pride of life. While we are still held in captivity in our own Egypt. And we don't want to get out. It's time for us to finally face it and come across the big, great, red, bloody sea. Even if God has to take us through the desert. You see, we want freedom. We want God to free us from all these things, the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh and the vanity of this life. Oh, God, please help me. I want out of this. But if you're going to take me through the desert, forget it. I might stay in this secretly and forget about it. We have chosen adultery. We have chosen impurity. We have chosen unholy lives because we have chosen the pleasure over worship. We have chosen adultery instead of purity. So the questions, are we adulterers of the heart? Am I being truthful to the one I love? Am I honoring God by my purity of heart and mind? Faithfulness does not begin with your actions. It starts with your mind and your thoughts. Purity honors God and honors others. In everything. You shall not steal. Love this. Respecting other people's property. When you steal, what you're basically saying is, I don't care about what you have. I don't care if it's yours. I don't care how much you have worked for it. I don't care about you. If I want it, I'm taking it. Not only that, you're also saying, you know what? If you were a better provider, then I wouldn't have to take what's not mine. And you may think, well, you know, hey, I don't steal. This is more than just burglary. How about dishonest business? Being dishonest in our transactions. Being dishonest with our taxes. Oh, gotta love this. Even theft at work. If you didn't pay for it, why do you take it home? When we steal, we take advantage of others for financial gain. We dismiss and we question God's ability to properly provide for us. We say, well, your provision is not enough. Have you ever found something in your possession somewhere, somehow, and then you're like, that's not mine. Guys, how many tools you may have in your tool shed that belong to somebody else? Why don't you just take it back? Well, it's been 5 years. Take it back. I was just looking through my tools, and I found somebody else's tool in my toolbox right here at church yesterday as I was working. I'm like, what is this doing here? You burglar. Thou shalt not steal. So I got to see him today and say, hey, bro, this is yours. I don't know how it got there, but I have it, so I'm guilty, okay? I should be making restitution, paying it back. I should be repenting. They go hand in hand. I want to make it right. Imagine, read a story about a lady who returned a book to the library after 70 years. She returned it. She said, well, 70 years ago, I took this book out of the library. It's not mine. She was like 90-something years old. And she brought it to the library and said, how much I owe you? Imagine that. Now, let's not go too far. This happened to me a few days ago. Go to Home Depot. There's a new cashier there that I've never seen before. New young lady. And she's bleep, 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 bleep with the gun. Everything that I had in the cart. And I had like 10 pieces of long pipe. And she bleep, bleep, went everywhere. And I'm not paying attention. As she gives me the total, I put the card. I didn't pay attention. And as I put the code in to pay for it, I notice I'm like, $70 total. I'm like, something's wrong here. She's like, what? You know, the customer service you get from the young people out there? What? And I said, something's wrong here because I have 10 pieces of pipe here. And if I'm not mistaken, each of them is $20. That's $200 worth of pipe. Well, here's your receipt. And I said, no, wait a second, young lady. Let me check. You see this? You only charged me for one pipe. And there's 9 more. There's 10. Oh, well, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, you don't get this, girl. I said that. You don't get this, girl. Let me tell you something. You know about this. Uh-huh. And I said, I know about this. Yeah. She said, well, you can go. And I'm like, no, because there's somebody else who knows about this. That's God. And she says, that's the truth. Just like that. And I said, no, you go back and charge me for the other 9 pieces that you didn't. Oh, well. She grabs the receipt, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want that in my conscience, especially I'm preaching tomorrow about this stuff. I mean, come on. You see, we got to be honest at work. We got to be honest in everywhere and everything. You see, we do the same thing when we withhold generosity. And when we're not generous, when we just don't give, when we just don't, are we trustworthy stewards? Because we think of stealing as taken, but how about not giving and becoming stingy, knowing that God has given us so much? Are we content? That's one of the questions. Are we content with what we have, or do we want more, more, more? Do we give generously, or do we take what is not ours in subtle ways? How about the way we give to God? Is it truly given or just another way of stealing from God? And I leave you with that, and let's go to the number 9. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Don't be talking about people. Gossip is juicy. And it's sweet, doesn't it? I got to be honest with you. I fall into this trap sometimes. Really? Oh, come on. For reals. Let me tell you what happened. Now, I'm going to be honest. How many of you fall into that trap sometimes? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, there's a couple of you. I'm watching you. No, I'm just kidding. I better look in the mirror. Oh, my goodness. This is true. And it's foundational that we may relate with each other in a just and righteous way. This is about righteousness. False witness is going to pervert that. We need to be people of truth. Now, of course, sometimes we just don't realize that we're telling the story the way it was told to us. And it gets a little oomph when you tell it to somebody else, right? And it gets distorted and you're like, that's not what I meant, but that's what you said. I don't know. But at the same time, before you make judgments, and this is a lesson that I've learned with many, many, many slaps in the face, being judgmental. This is something that I've had to struggle and be smacked and back around again. Do not just take everything you hear just lightly and go for it and be judgmental. Think about it. Be still. Know that he's God. Think about the other person. Pray for the other person. Because all of a sudden you become judgmental and you're not being a good witness. You don't know what's going on in their hearts. You don't know what's going on in their lives. That's something that I've heard probably about 14 years ago. 14 years ago, I remember to this day, after I was very judgmental with one person, a friend of mine, a brother of mine, who's sitting right here, told me, "Well, you don't know what's going on in our lives." And I still remember it to this day, Bill, when you said that to me. And it still hits me. I got to be careful before I make judgments and before I bear a witness on somebody that I may be so wrong about. Because I'll be distorting the truth. And that's not good. Mark Twain said, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes." So quickly, right? Truth matters. Now that we speak truth in love, are we quick to gossip, slander, or deceive? Do we exaggerate, twist facts, or gossip? Of course, as Christians, we should be the most trustworthy people in the world. Think about it. Let's go to the last one so we can get out of here. You shall not covet. Now, I know that this one here has a few things included, right? You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey, anything that belongs to your neighbor. You hear that? Thou shalt not covet anything that belongs to somebody else. We got to cultivate contentment, basically, is what I'm saying. Be content with what you have. Quit looking over the fence. Because coveting is a sin of the heart. It's an internal sin. It's an internal sin. It's discontentment with what God has given us. It's a hidden sin sometimes, right? But sooner or later, it'll flesh out. The desire for having what others have. Jealousy, envy, greed, discontent. You've always heard the saying about, you know what, the grass is greener on the other side, right? Well, I read this and I thought it was pretty cool. A man looked over the fence and said, "The grass is greener on the other side." And his friend replied, "Maybe, but their water bill is higher." Be careful what you envy. You may not want the cost. I like that. So be gracious. Be grateful. Sorry. Be grateful. Gratitude is going to combat your covetousness. Are you grateful? Are you a grateful person? If you do not want to cultivate gratefulness then in your heart, then you can easily be infected by this bacteria called coveting. So, are we content or are we always complaining? Are we grateful for what God has given us? Or always wanting more? Do we rejoice when others are blessed? Oh, that's included too, yeah. So I want you to know that from the perspective of the Bible, we can say that the law of God, right here, the commandments, have three purposes. They are very simple. It's like a guardrail, right? Keeping us on a moral path. Don't get off of it. Number two is like a mirror. It's a guardrail that keeps us in the path. But it's also a mirror showing us our moral failures and how much we need a Savior. See, the commandments do that. They show me that I need a Savior. Why? Because I can't comply with them. And it is also a guide showing us the heart and the desires of God for us. It shows us the heart of God. They're not just rules. They're a reflection of God's heart. They expose our sin. And God said that in his word, that the law was given so that sin would be exposed. And when sin is exposed, it should point us to the need of grace. And we all need grace. Thank God for his grace.
Corinth Baptist Church, a church on the way to God's heart, presented a message for your life. If this message has been an impact to your life and you would like to listen to previous sermons or more information about our church, visit our website www.horevnola.com.